Hello and welcome in to episode 64 of the Calcio Connection podcast, connecting with you Italian football fans from all over the world. We just finished watching the Azzurri and a 0-0 draw against Poland. Not the most exciting game in the world, but I did try to bring my good luck charm. Yeah, I know that for those of you who are just listening to this, you can't see this sweet jersey that I'm holding up. For those of you watching us on YouTube, and by the way, I hope you've subscribed to our YouTube channel by now. Just search Calcio Connection, be one of the over a dozen subscribers we have. We've only posted one video so far on YouTube, so hopefully we can build this platform up. But yeah, we just watched the Azzurri draw 0-0 with Poland. Alex Dono alongside Jerry Mancini. Jerry, no relation, of course, at least I don't think any relation to Italy head man Roberto Mancini, whose team couldn't find the breakthrough here today. Jerry, how are you?
I'm fantastic. That was a dreadful game to watch. I think that was one of the worst pitches that... It scared me because... What about if a player took one bad turn, one bad pivot, and all of a sudden you have an Achilles injury, ankle injury, you get something similar to Zaniolo, and all of a sudden you're thinking, oh no, that I don't want to be in that situation. And then people are going to say, well, what about depth? I thought you had depth. And I hate this analogy where you hear, oh, you got other players in your team, right? And it's like, no, it's not the point. You don't want to lose a player at international duty. You would rather feel the security of knowing that you lost your player due to league play and that they were there to help regardless. But it's scary when you're watching those guys today and how the ball's bouncing. It's not really bouncing properly and it's lagging. A lot of the passes today, I felt that on any other given day would be easier. I felt like every time someone made a pass, the ball would just stop halfway because of the turf and the way the water and the damp and everything probably. But overall, it was a dreadful game. But I thought my player of the game was Moise Kean. When he came off the bench, he made an impact. I thought in 20 minutes, he really made a spark. And Chiesa missing that sitter at the beginning of the game was... I don't want to chirp on the guy. I'm not going to hate on him. But Chiesa does a lot of good things. A lot of good runs, a lot of good crosses. He can make good passes. But his finish is just... It's like a step behind, and a lot of sitters, a lot of good chances he should be bearing, but it didn't disrupt him from his game. I'll give him that. Like, he kept battling hard, good intensity, good motivation. We'll see what happens going forward, but overall, I would probably give him a 6-7 out of 10 for his game.
Yeah, you talked about that sitter in the first half that Chiesa couldn't score on. That was a really nice cross that he received from Belotti. And, you know, that was like the chance for the two of them to collaborate and really do something, because both of them, especially Belotti, I thought were pretty poor in the match. And we've seen that before. As soon as Belotti puts on that Azzurri jersey, he struggles, which has, you know, been kind of a familiar thing lately. And really, I thought that there was a lot of good to go with the bad, right? We talked about it not being a good game, being a sloppy game. It didn't help that the pitch in Gdansk, Poland, was in really poor shape. But, you know, overall, you know, for those who didn't see it, and for those who did, you'd probably agree with me, I thought the Azzurri deserved more from this game than they got. They really controlled the match. The back line was excellent. You know, even going up against a guy like Robert Lewandowski, you didn't really feel like you were in tremendous danger. There were a couple of decent balls put into Lewandowski in the first half. You know, one of those was a big sliding challenge by Emerson to really save Lewandowski for being able to score on it. Bonucci had a nice header back to Donnarumma on a cross that was intended for Lewandowski. So the back line did their job. The midfield definitely did their job. It's just a problem with the attack, you know. And of course, midweek, you saw the Azzurri score 6 goals against Moldova, but you and I could each have a hat trick against Moldova. I mean, there's really no challenge to that whatsoever. So, I mean, I think overall, you can continue to see that Roberto Mancini is doing a fantastic job with the Azzurri, because, you know, for in the back third and in the middle third of the pitch, they look really good, really balanced in their 4-3-3. You know, they controlled the game. They had more opportunities. They had a lot more possession than Poland did for what that's worth. And even when Poland was able to get the ball on the counter, the Azzurri did a nice job tracking back and not giving space. I mean, I thought especially in the first half, which is, you know, when the Azzurri had probably their best chances, including the Chiesa chance, was when they really should have found the breakthrough and opened up the scoring. Because in that first half, like, Poland could barely string two passes together. I mean, Italy's press in the first half was really good. They were plugging up passing lanes. I mean, every time Poland touched the ball in the first half, it was basically a clearance to no one in particular, not even putting passes together. But, you know, we know how it is in this game. If you can't score, you can't win, right? So if you're looking ahead, you know, to what the Euros may look like next year, you know, if Ciro, you know, who didn't play in this match, and if Belotti and Moise Kean, who played, you know, very well, didn't score but created some chances, you know, if these guys can't find a way to score goals, and Chiesa for that matter, if these guys can't find ways to score goals consistently in the Azzurri shirt, you're not going to go very far in the Euros. I do think, Jerry, it's going to make a difference when they have Insigne back on the left wing instead of Pellegrini. And Pellegrini today, by the way, this guy can't even put a corner kick in play. I mean, did you see the first couple of corners that he took? He couldn't even put it in play. He was putting it out of bounds for goal kicks. I mean, that was really troublesome. I mean, Italy had a lot of corners in this game. You would think that if Pellegrini could have put a couple of decent deliveries, maybe you could have scored on a set piece.
You know who looks alive in this game? Lorenzi. Ooh. I think Lorenzi leaving Roma really has really turned his career around. And since going to PSG, he looks like a whole new player. He looked really good this game. He made a lot of good runs playing on the right side. And you know what? He wasn't liable for any plays. He made the simple passes, he made the simple runs, very good, simple coverage. So for me, I thought Florenzi looked pretty decent. And at the end of the day, the number nine is going to be Ciro Immobile. That's just the way I'm looking at it right now. Regardless, Immobile just looks more faster, more energetic, more quicker. We saw when he played against the Netherlands and he set up Barella for his goal, and he just looked really impactful all game. And a lot of people are going to say, well, you're supposed to score. And you look at a game like this, sometimes your number nine may not be able to score, but if he's able to open up players, contribute in different ways, that really pays off in the end. So a guy like Immobile is able to take away a defender, open up space, and allow someone else to score. And with Belotti, I just think the way he plays, he looked like a step behind. Now, again, like I say, the weather could have been a major factor, the whole grass and everything looking damp. That can really affect the way people play too. So I don't want to say solely that players played bad just because they were so bad. In my opinion, if the turf is not good, the pitch is not good, and you're struggling to run and you're slipping everywhere, you can see chunks of grass flying everywhere as soon as someone makes a step. So to me, I find that has a lot of impact on how someone plays throughout a game and the way the ball bounces too. If in a regular game, you know how to react, how to time your jumps, how to like time your runs. And a game like this where you see the ball just slowing down, and a lot of the passes Italy was making, I noticed that it wasn't really reaching to a player, and it allowed Poland to intercept it a lot of the time. So that can really make a difference in the game. But I really liked Florenzi. I think Pellegrini's shit. His crosses are garbage. The guy tripped over his own feet like three times in the box. Like, holy crap, man. Finish your run. And Verratti's, that guy can make a long pass, eh?
He really impressed me today. There were two or three occasions where he was dribbling in these tight spaces with three Polish players right up on him, and he was dribbling out of those spaces. Like, I mean, his control, I mean, I don't watch him enough lately because I don't watch PSG in the French league as much as you do, but I sometimes forget how good Verratti is.
Oh, he's actually superb in the French league, and like, he can make good passes, good reading. He reads the game very well, and he covers a lot of space I think that's where he's really effective, is that he covers a lot of the midfield, and that's something a lot of players can't do. So I really do like Verratti. I wish he didn't play for PSG. He should be back in the playing in Italy, but that's a whole different case. But overall, yeah, decent game from Italy. Can't complain. Thought Donnarumma was good when he had to be. Wasn't really tested, but when he was, he was decent. I do believe that we'll see Chiellini start next game. I know that Acerbi's on a yellow, so I don't expect him to be playing next game. Probably see Chiellini, Bonucci. I don't know who else they have called up right now.
Bonucci was good in the game. I can't complain about his performance whatsoever. Yeah, I think I mentioned Emerson Palmieri making a great defensive play. He also looked pretty lively in the attacking third, but again, just had trouble finishing. Like although a scoring chance that he had, which was maybe one of Italy's top two chances in the second half, I thought he took a little bit of a shove. It was one of those things where it like wasn't enough to be a clear penalty, but it was enough to alter his movement so he couldn't get a final touch on the ball. So it was like, it was one of those things where I almost felt like if he had gone down, he might have gotten the penalty call, but instead he stayed up to try to finish it. And there was also an instance where, you know, Moise Kean, who's strong as hell, he really got like shouldered over, but he stayed on his feet in the box. And maybe if he'd gone to ground, he might have gotten the call, but, you know, he didn't get the call because he stood on his feet. But It is what it is. I mean, I'm certainly I'm somewhat satisfied with the way they play, but the Azzurri certainly did not really address any of the concerns we have about goal scoring and finishing. So let's move on from that and back into Serie A. You know, we have it's been pretty quiet with the international break going on, but it's certainly not been quiet, Jerry, for those anticipating the Milan Derby. Now, we're not going to spend much time on that because we're going to have a big episode early in the week about that. We're going to be joined by Steve and Vinny from Milan Weekly Podcast, who I really, even though I'm an Interista, I love their show. Like, I really love their show. And I'm looking forward to having them, you know, collaborate with us and join us for our next episode. So we're going to have a full Derby preview coming up. But, you know, Jerry, I am a little bit concerned. I think maybe there's a chance, not that I do not want this to happen, but, you know, Inter, as it stands, are, you know, four positive COVID-19 cases away from having to postpone this game, or at least not being eligible to play in it, because COVID-19 is really starting to run through their squad. Up until the last week, they hadn't had any issue with COVID-19, so it just came out of nowhere. You know, the first guy confirmed positive for Inter was Alessandro Bastoni. That was, I think, less than a week ago. And since then, and one of like the quirks, the weird things about this virus is it's so hard to quarantine positive cases and stop the infection, because you'll have one guy test positive on a Monday and you think, oh, if I just remove him and isolate him now, the rest of the squad is good because they all test negative, right? No, over the next couple of days, you have 2, 3, 4, 5 more players test positive, because you never know when the infection is going to set in and come up on a test. So it makes it really hard to trace and quarantine and stop the infection. So up to this point, Inter have 6 confirmed positives, players who are not going to be able to play in the Milan Derby. And it's Bastoni, as I mentioned, Milan Skriniar, which means the back line is going to be very thin. Roberto Gagliardini and Raja Nainggolan from the midfield both infected. Ashley Young was the most recent case. And Andre Radu, the backup keeper to Handanovic, is also positive. So, I cross my fingers that this is the last of it. So what we'll likely see a back line in the derby of De Vrij in the center of the back three, Kolarov on the left side of the back three, and D'Ambrosio on the right side of the back three. We know that Kolarov is a human traffic cone when it comes to defending. So at least the positive is Milan is more dangerous on the left side than they are on the right side. So the more of the danger is going to be in D'Ambrosio's direction, who's, you know, a little bit more fleet of foot, right? He's not my top choice right center back, but he's more fleet of foot than Kolarov on the left side. And so, I don't know. I think it's maybe like a 30-35% chance this gets worse and the game is not even played as scheduled on Saturday. But, I mean, Jerry, how does this affect maybe your prediction for the Milan Derby, knowing that Inter is going to be without at least 6 players for this game?
Don't you miss Diego Godin right now?
Yes. I mean, I missed him already. Wow. But yeah, I miss him even more now.
Like, Odin would have made a massive impact. I guess this is why Conte bought more fullbacks and he bought more midfielders. I guess he took into consideration the whole coronavirus and not just injuries, but maybe losing players throughout the season. So how do I see this playing out? This is an advantage to Milan because now they don't need to worry. Zlatan Ibrahimovic now has the upper hand. He's going to play a much weaker back line. So I think this benefits him a lot coming into this game. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this one plays out.
And Zlatan, he had COVID-19, but he is now negative and cleared to play. So he is back. So I guess you could say, you know, Zlatan had his infection at a better time. Oh, did I freeze? Am I still here? Hello?
You froze, but you're not moving in the picture.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
You can still hear me, though?
Yeah, I can see it. I can hear you and everything, but it's frozen on my end, but I don't know.
Oh, jeez. All right, we'll keep rolling through it then. I don't know what to do about that, but I did want to move on, Jerry. The last thing I wanted to get to on this episode was, you know, now that the quote-unquote summer transfer window is over, right? Squads are theoretically complete at this time, and I think it's led both of us to tweak our top six predictions a little bit in Serie A. And it's not just the transfer window being over. I think it also has to do with now we've seen most of these teams play three games, you know, a couple, Napoli and Juve have only played twice, but we've seen most of these teams play three games. So maybe we have kind of a better idea. I want to start with yours because, let me let you give your updated top six first. And then I have one question, or maybe you can address this, why you changed a little bit in that top six. Go ahead.
Well, I don't exactly remember my top six, but I went with Juventus now first, Inter second. And I think that what they did at the transfer market with acquiring Chiesa and getting younger, but younger, good talent in their squad, and the fact that De Ligt's gonna come back, and Dybala as well. I think they have a lot of balance throughout their whole lineup, and their midfield is much better than last season with Arthur, and you have Wes McKennie, who looks like he's going to flourish under, Pirlo. And the last thing is, this whole Pirlo is not going to do well because he hasn't had games under him. I think at the end of the day, I didn't really consider this. He's got a lot of coaches, like a lot of assistant coaches that have a lot of experience and understand how to coach. And at the end of the day, he's got people who are going to guide him to make the right decisions and trial and error, but he has the support that is needed to win games at the end of the day. So I think they have the foundation in place, and it'll be a rocky start, but as Juventus knows, they always start off slow. And as the season progresses, they pick up where they were left off from last season. And with Inter, I think they have a lot of good depth, but now looking at their signings, there are a lot of injury-prone signings, I find.
Yeah, Vidal is injury-prone.
Like, that guy couldn't stay healthy last season with Barcelona. And then you got Korolov, who can't run if his life depended on it. And then you have Stefan Davies, who I do think he's the best defender.
There's nothing wrong with him, dude. Like, why would you even bring him up? He's fine. That's the guy. That's probably the guy I worry about least. In the him and Lukaku, I worry about.
That's the problem. Because then what happens is and that's what scares me about Cherbi with the Galazio, is that they're so over dependent that one bad injury and that whole back line for Inter is done. If Stefan De Vrij goes hurt, I think that whole back line is a disaster. Probably. From top to bottom, okay? It doesn't matter what you have, Skriniar, and you have Bastoni. Those guys are good. But I feel like they're good because Stefan De Vrij makes them better. And with his presence, and like it's the same with Lazio, where Acerbi goes down, it's very scary. And I know a lot of people say, well, you need to go get another Acerbi in the market. You need to get another Stefan De Vrij. Inter doesn't have another Stefan De Vrij on the bench. I don't care who Skriniar is. I don't care who Bastoni is. Those guys are good defenders, but they're not elite to what he can produce in 90 minutes per game. how stable, how reliable he is. And just, it's going to be difficult, I find, for Inter. And then to compete for first going down the stretch. And then also, who knows what they do in Champions League? That's another thing. Does Conte go all in on Champions League and really put more consideration to it? Does he not? Mm-hmm. That's another thing. And then you have Napoli. I still think Napoli is going to come out third. I think they've done a lot of good things in the market, a lot of transfer market moves starting from January. My stance hasn't changed on them. I know they weren't as active in the summer transfer market. I know they failed to sell Milik and the whole dispute of what it was, but I still give them the edge because they got Koulibaly as well, and I still go with Lazio in fourth. Not because I'm a Lazio fan, because I do believe that they had a decent transfer market. Yeah, they didn't get a center back that many people would have wanted, another Acerbi, but Wesley Ho coming back. I'll keep on saying it. This is a guy who wants to play with Lazio, who wants to prove himself that he belongs with the team. He does come cheap, and Lazio has actually spent a lot of money. They were one of the most active teams spending in the transfer market. I believe they were a negative 28 million, I want to say. They spent more than they sold. So that's the first time in the Lotito era where this is the first time I forgot what it was. If we didn't sell more than, or we spent more than we sold in an era in the last 4 or 5 years. So he didn't make double digits, like 20 million in profit. But I was reading today, like last year, I believe we made 20 million profits. I forgot who we sold, but like the year before was Felipe Anderson. The year before that was Kiete Balde, and they sold, forgot who else we sold. And Wesley Ho, we sold like for 40 million. So there's been, the last 4 years, we've always made a profit. This year, Lotito has not made a profit, and he's spent money where he can. Now, we do have a good striker coming in. We got some good midfielders, Andrea Pereira. So I'm pretty confident that if the only thing here's the big question mark at the end of the day. If Inzaghi rotates his squad properly, and he uses Pereira in a game like Saturday against Sampdoria, and you got Spezia, and you're resting Immobile, Sergei Milinkovic-Savic, and you're playing your other guys that you bought, such as Akpa Akpro, Gonzalo Escalante. That's how I believe that Lazio will survive this season. When you're playing Immobile against these shit teams, or not shit, but not good, but that's how you're going to run your team down. And that was an issue with Lazio last season, where we overran these players and just depended on Serie A. And it all depends on how much Inzaghi is willing to rotate his lineup. That's the biggest if. This guy needs to figure out. And even when we say we don't have enough center backs, go to a four back.
Mm-hmm.
Use two full, go two center backs and use a right back and a left back. Like, I don't see why we can't use Lazzari on the right and Mohamed Fares on the left, and you go with Acerbi and Felipe in the middle, or Patrick. You can change things up. You have the personnel. You have the extra players to change up your formation, where you don't always have to play a 3-5-2. Right. And no longer are you worried about, do you have enough center backs? You can change it up. There's ways to do it. And I think that Inzaghi seems pretty excited because he's got more players coming his way than he's ever had in the last four seasons, probably. And I have Atalanta fifth because I don't think they were that active in the transfer market. I think they sold more players than they bought. I know they brought Stammers in, but I haven't really looked at their lineup, to be honest. I just feel that they might down the road, down the season, they're going to like have a lot of upset games where they're going to drop a lot of points. I don't know. I think they're very heavily dependent on Papu Gomez. And if something happens to Papu Gomez, I think that team doesn't hold together as strong as with him in the lineup, personally.
I mean, for me, I think the players that they kept are so crucial, and Ilicic being back is just gigantic. But go ahead. What was your number six?
I will go with Milan. Milan was my number six. I would say six in Milan, and I had Roma seventh. I dropped Fiorentina right down the barrel. Like that team's terrible.
Now that they've sold Chiesa, it only gets worse. Yeah.
Yeah, that team has no direction. No. Oh, it's so bad. That team's a walking time bomb. Like the richest owner in Serie A, and it looks like it's not getting any better.
So let me give you my old top six real quick. This was before the transfer market closed, and I'll give you my new top six. There's not a whole lot of change here, but my old top six, I have always had Juventus winning their 10th straight Scudetto, Inter placing second, Napoli placing third. In my old top six, I had Milan in fourth, Lazio in fifth, Atalanta in sixth. So here's my updated version, Jerry. The top three I have unchanged. We haven't seen Juve as much as most of these other teams. They did drop points against Roma, but still, I think they have the horses and the talent to win the Scudetto. So I'm going to stick with Juve at number one. I'm going to stick with Inter at number two. Although, man, if they end up dropping points in the derby because they're missing so many bodies, I'm going to be really annoyed by that. I am sticking with Napoli at number three, but you know, I've got to say Napoli is a team, and they've also played one fewer game because it was their game against Juve that got called off, or you know they quote unquote didn't follow the protocol, even though they were following the laws. They were following the law, but they weren't following the rules. It's so ridiculous. Okay, but you know Napoli we've only seen twice, but they've looked really impressive. Osimhen has looked really impressive. So even though I'm keeping Napoli at number three, I think their stock is rising. Like I'm more convinced about them now than I was a couple weeks ago. So here's my first change, okay, in my top six. I've just been so damn impressed with them so far, including you know what they did to your team, who I have a lot of respect for. I've got Atalanta. I moved them into my top four. Okay, I moved Atalanta up two spots from number six to number four. I kind of felt like I was a little bit harsh on them originally having them number six. They still look like a well-oiled machine. Again, who knows? Maybe they'll have problems in three competitions, but they didn't last year, right? I mean, last year, you know, they handled Champions League perfectly fine. And then when Serie A came back and they were playing two games a week, they did start to fade like final maybe two, three match days of the season. But for most of it, they were fine. So I have Atalanta in a Champions League spot up at number four. So I have moved Milan down, even though, you know, God bless them, they haven't dropped any points yet. But still, I'm just so impressed with Atalanta. I moved Atalanta up, and I moved Milan down one spot to number five. And apologies, I did move Lazio down one spot to number six. So that is my new top six is... Top three the same, Juve, Inter, Napoli, Atalanta fourth. Those are the four Champions League spots. Milan fifth, Lazio sixth. So that's about all I wanted to discuss today. So any parting comments, Jerry, as we're a couple days away from a new episode, 4 days away, 5 days away from, 6 days away because we're taping this on Sunday. My math is not strong. 6 days away from Serie A returning. Anything you want to sign off with?
No, I love the Lazio doubters all over Twitter. They're bashing me, saying that I'm delusional because we had a poor transfer market when we just spent almost a record fee for a striker of Vedat Muriqi, who is right behind Lautaro Zerati as our second highest paid player under the Lotito era. We brought Andreas Pereira, who has high wages, to Lazio. And Lazio has the sixth highest wages I saw today. In Serie A, how people say that Lotito is cheap when he has the sixth highest in wages, like it's absurd. We just re-signed Luis Alberto to a new contract. We just re-signed Ciro Immobile to a new contract. Francesco Acerbi will renew his contract, I believe. Milinkovic-Savic was last season he renewed his contract. So he's building a foundation here. It doesn't just happen overnight. Yeah, like I said, we didn't address the defense as good as we could have. But at the end of the day, you buy two center backs. You don't buy a striker. You don't buy a midfielder. All of a sudden, you hear, well, we don't have any backup for Luis Alberto now. We don't have a backup for Immobile now, but we have a backup for Acerbi. Like, it's always going to be a win-lose situation where you want to cover all three spots. And at the end of the day, they just have so much dead weight that it makes it harder to acquire players too. We bought Dennis Vavro last summer for $10 million. I wish we never bought this guy because I believe that Inzaghi never wanted this guy in the first place.
Yeah.
I think he's played, what, maybe a handful of games? Spent $10 million for him. Could have bought, with that money there, plus we bought Rizzo Dermisi for $7.5 million. You're looking at $20 million now almost with wages and everything. You could have bought Kumbula when you really look into hindsight. And you bought two players that Inzaghi never wanted. And I think that's the downfall of Totti, that he buys these players where he really likes, but he needs to consult with the manager, because if he's not going to play them, there's no need to buy them.
Yeah.
There has to be a relationship, like a connection where Inzaghi knows who you're buying and what the game plan is, because at the end of the day, he doesn't care that you spent $20 million for a player and his value is going to go down.
He's going to play the best guys no matter what.
Exactly. That's what it's going to come down to. So
look at Conte with Eriksen. Right? Yeah. I mean, no matter how much you're paying the guy, he's going to put who he feels is the best. Some of us may disagree with some of Conte's choices, but he's going to play who he wants to play, not who's making the most money or who is the most expensive.
I'm curious about that signing, because I don't think Conte ever wanted him personally. I have this feeling that he never wanted Eriksen in the first place. Like the way he uses him, the way he sparingly puts him in, it kind of reminds me of Inzaghi. Like I think that Conte and Inzaghi have like similar traits, where if they're not comfortable with a player, they are not going to play a player regardless. Absolutely.
And the way that they evaluate players, it can be different from the way fans evaluate, because fans look at maybe who's the most creative, who's the most skilled on the ball, where, you know, managers like Conte and Inzaghi look at, okay, who tracks back the most defensively, right? Who keeps us the most balanced? And I think those are some of the issues where they may see it differently than the fans see it.
No, absolutely. So I trust Inzaghi. I've heard that Marco Parolo might start at center back on Saturday. That is an alternative, because Luis Felipe did take laser surgery for his leg today, and apparently he's 100% healed. So we'll see how I've heard that it speeds up the process and it heals it quicker. I didn't know this, but he's 50-50 for Saturday, but it is what it is. And at the end of the day, I just wish that those two signings never happened. But now I'm okay with the transfer market. I think that people are a little bit too critical as well, because it's a whole pandemic and a whole different era. Had Lazio made Champions League last season, like the season prior, I think we'd be looking at a different Lotito, where he would have been able to spend money and buy players and do things differently, because he had the income coming in. Everything was guaranteed, ticket sales. Now there's so much uncertainty that for a lot of clubs, that you're not getting that full revenue, that full money that you'd be earning on a Champions League or anything, because there's a lot of lost money still. Even though you're still recouping money going to Champions League, you're not selling out games fully. We don't even know if there are going to be a lot of fans in a crowd. Like, there's just so many factors that really changed the way teams will make money this season. So it is what it is. I still think that Inzaghi will prove a lot of people wrong. Since he's taken over as manager, every year he continues to impress and do something new with this team. Last season was Champions League. The year before was Coppa Italia. Before that was winning the Supercoppa Italiana against La Juventus.
Mm-hmm.
There's always been something
new. And you won a Supercoppa this past year as well.
Yep, against Juventus again. So he keeps on impressing. I think that he's right. If he has the players, I think you'll see something different from Inzaghi. I think you'll see more comfort level, where he will rotate his lineup, and you'll see a different path with Lazio this season. So we'll see what happens.
Well, that'll do it for this episode. And you know, if anybody is wondering why I'm not wearing this vintage Baggio jersey that I brought with me after watching the Azzurri, I'm not wearing it because I bought this, Jerry, during the 1994 World Cup. I was 9 years old. So, you know, several hundred pizzas later, I can't exactly fit into a jersey that fit me when I was nine. So I'm wearing an extra large Inter away kit from last year. Instead, you're wearing a Lazio kit, of course, as no one would be surprised by either of the kits we're wearing whatsoever. So huge thank you to those of you who are watching us on YouTube. Make sure if you haven't already, you hit the like button on this video and you hit subscribe to the channel, because that's huge. I mean, I think at the time we started taping this, we have, this is only our second YouTube video, so bear with us. But I think at the time we started taping this episode, we have 14 subscribers, hoping to get that at least into the 20s by the time the next time we tape one of these. And of course, if you listen to us on the podcast, whatever platform you listen to us, audio only, make sure to hit 5 stars, which takes 1 second. And if you have maybe 30 seconds, hit 5 stars and leave us a 5-star review. That's a huge help as well. Remember, we have a lot more content coming up this week. We're going to have a big Milan Derby preview with Vinny and Steve from the Milan Week. I'm going to try and hold my end on the Inter side of it. We'll let those two hold up the Milan side of it. And Jerry could be the referee between the two sides. So we'll talk to everyone on the next episode of the Calcio Connection podcast. Ciao.